With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, welcome to Woodburn Corner, the West Bromwich Albion podcast that has just about got over Aston Villa's playoff loss. I'm Graham Brown, and I'm joined today by Kieran Doody. How are you doing, Kieran?
Hi, Graham. Yeah, not bad, Jim.
Yeah, I'm great, thank you. And I'm glad to say we're back to what we do best. So we've got a former Baggies player in as our guest this week, which in the shape of Paul Sharner. Greg Evans, who's one of our football correspondents, has had a good chat with him, and it's really, really strong. So, Kieran, do you want to just talk us through the various things that they go through?
Yeah, he starts with his favourite Albion moment, so his goal at Villa Park was one, lifting the shirt against Wolves when he scored against Wolves.
Yeah.
And everyone talks us beyond how his son designed it for him. There's also talk about how the players reacted, so when he outed them all for not trying hard enough in the Premier League, under Di Matteo, I think it was at the time.
Yeah.
And how he ended up having to sit on his own at a table at the Christmas party. He talks about how he had supporters group meetings in Sutton Coldfield when he was there. And then he finishes on the philosophy he thinks Albion should have going forward. They need to redesign their way of thinking, really, and have a 10-year plan.
That's why I'm so pleased that he's on here. Actually, he's one of those rare modern footballers that actually understands the role of the fans and the role of players in the kind of wider scheme of things, and that really comes through in this interview. Yeah, his view on where he thinks the future for Albion is particularly interesting. I think what's also interesting is he doesn't seem to be backward in coming forward and pointing out that he'd quite like to be involved in the future for Albion. So go on, he's on. You tell me, what's your favourite ever Paul Sharner moment?
Oh, it's definitely the last minute goal at Villa Park. You know, a lot of people say that the rivalry is Albion Wolves, but as an Albion fan from Birmingham, all my friends at Villa, and born in 1992, I'd never seen us beat them until that year.
Yeah.
And we'd beat them early in the season. And then, you know, for the first time in my life, I had the bragging rights. It's probably one of my all-time favourite Albion goals that I've seen. No mind just shot on us, so yeah, definitely that.
Well, you're not on your own. I was born in 1981, and that was the first season I saw us beat Villa, so that's it. But I'll go with, for the reason I've already outlined, I think my favourite Sharner moment actually is what didn't happen on the pitch. I was so, so pleased to see a footballer that wears Albion colours that took it upon himself to address what he saw as a shortcoming in the players. I mean, just imagine if we had that. Just imagine if we had Paul Sharner this year to shake up that absolute shower of individuals, you know, that went to Barcelona that absolutely capitulated on the pitch time after time after time. I mean, I wasn't his absolute biggest fan as a footballer, but I mean, actually, as a part of a team, God, we could have really done with him this season, couldn't we?
It wouldn't have happened, Barcelona. They'd probably have dragged them back himself, I think, never mind Pardew. So.
Yeah, that comes through in spades, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely in this now, what you're about to hear.
So I think what's interesting about this is I think Sharner would probably, you know, we've got rid of Garlick, we have we've got rid of our chief executives and blah, blah, blah. We've also got rid of Nick Hammond. So there's some roles here, and we kind of get the impression that Sharner wouldn't mind one or two of them. I mean, how would you feel about that, about him being part of the kind of higher echelons of the club?
I think he'd get it in the sense that, you know, the Albion in particular are very much, you know, it's not all about the team. There's a way the club should be run.
Yeah.
As far as fans are concerned. And I think he understands that completely. But I'm sure fans would love to see him at Albion in some capacity. What that is, we don't know.
It seems to be interesting, the kind of more technical side of it. I mean, this will return me to a point. Well, I've just outlined how much I like Paul Sharner, a point that I make all the time, which is that it doesn't matter to me whether or not you played for the club before. What matters to me is your kind of expertise. And, you know, being someone... I kept hearing this. In fact, I heard it yesterday, someone who advocated sacking Steve Bruce from Aston Villa to bring in Dean Smith, a bloke who really understands Aston Villa, which is, you know, just fundamental So I'm not going to swear because we have to click a certain button on a podcast if you swear. But it's so untrue. You know, he's a Villa, just because you're a Villa fan doesn't mean you understand the kind of the machinations and working of a club that has to deal with things like financial fair play and, you know, HS2 taking over your ground and so on. I think a bit the same of Sean. I'm really, really glad. I think he's a really good bloke. I'm glad that we signed him. I wouldn't want to see us recruit a technical director that's anyone other than someone who's been a successful technical director elsewhere, even if that's not in football. I would kind of rather see that. I don't really believe in this kind of cult of a football person, as I think I've referenced before. Really, you know, a good director is someone who takes responsibility for his brief and delivers on that. It doesn't really matter if they know to take corners. What do you think about? Do you have any concern about the fact that Albion don't have a head coach at this moment?
What, as in a head coach?
As in a assistant head coach at the moment. We've still got a head coach.
Yeah, I was worried then. I thought I'd miss something. No, not at the minute. I think, you know, he's got time to bring someone in. Who that is, there's literally no way of knowing. Dan Moore's keeping it under his cloak. So I think within a week or two, we will know who that is.
Well, I should prep our listeners for the fact that I'm going to start to panic about this soon. I mean, the assistant head coach less so, because I mean, the players on holiday and so on. But it's absolutely imperative that they start planning for the next season, you know, months and months and months ago. It's imperative that we, you know, if players are going to leave, they need to leave soon. If players are going to come in, they need to come in soon. That we need to kind of bed in what we're going to be next season. I'm not worried about there not being an assistant head coach now. If we haven't seen some demonstrable progress by the time we record the next podcast, you might be about to see some bedwetting from this part of Woodburn Corner.
I think the saving grace is that a lot of, you know, Neil Cutler and Shan are following him into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've already got that. It's continuing from the good run we had at the end of last season. So I think there's not too much of a panic just yet. Considering we don't even know what squad we'll have, so.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah, the problem with last season is, you know, you're probably not going to have Rondon, and you're almost certainly not going to have Dawson, and blah 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 blah, and you need to kind of see what you're left with. But yeah, no, fingers crossed. Well, anyway, as I say, it's good. You know, we've talked with the close of the season, we've talked a little bit about football recently, but this podcast was supposed to be about getting faces, giving and asking the questions that others don't ask. So let's do just that now. So I'll hand over to Greg Evans, who's speaking to Paul Sharna.
You had a habit of scoring goals in derby games.
Yep.
You scored two at Villa Park each time you played, one against Birmingham City. I just want to talk to you about the Villa games first. Your first goal was a last-minute goal. Meant nothing, didn't it? Then you got sent off, two bookings in the home game.
Yes.
And then you scored in the away game the following season. First of all, tell me about the sending off. What should you have been sent off?
It was two yellows.
Two yellows,
you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think it was... I just really get sent off twice in my Premier League career.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and no. I'm a defender, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it was just mistimed.
Okay.
Challenges, you know.
So there wasn't a particular player winding you up or anything like that?
No, not at all.
Okay.
And the only explain I had was against the referee, you know, from the beginning. That's why maybe he sent me off.
What happened then? You was just, you're in it.
Yeah, because a few decisions were,
fine. And your goal then at Villa Park, that winning goal, and just describe that feeling when you scored that.
Derbies are special, you know, for me, because also in Austria we are a little tiny football country actually, but we have a big derby in Vienna.
Yes.
Austria Vienna against Rapid Vienna, and I played for Austria Vienna, and I was always more motivated in these games because that meant a lot in the city, you know.
Yeah.
And I can remember the winning goal quite if it was now, you know.
Talk us through it.
But for me, so my intention was always, I'm not happy with a draw.
Yeah.
That's not enough for me, you know.
Yeah.
Either we win or either we lose. Not a draw, please.
Yes.
And in this case, because I think Villa got the sending off in this game.
Yes.
I think so. We were one man more. So, but it looked like...
Yes, Chris Hurd, wasn't it? Yes, Chris Hurd sending off. Yeah.
And Hodgson looked like looks like he was satisfied with the draw 1-1, you know, and I thought, hey, come on, if we have one more and we play derby, you know, I want to win, you know.
Yeah.
And I got the feeling before the game as well, you know, because against the Wolverhampton, the week before.
You won the week before against Wolves.
Yeah, genau. And I had the shirt already on, you know. And when I had the shirt under my dress, you know, I was quite certain I going to score. So
really?
Was a corner kick from the left-hand side from Brandy, I think. And the ball dropped. No. It was not a header. It was a left leg, left foot finish under the crossbar.
Yes.
Against Shea Given.
Yes.
And the celebration was unbelievable. You know? that was very scary for me last time when I was at Villa Park against QPR, because there was no away support.
Oh, really?
And I remember it was full, you know, 3,500 Vegas supporters, you know, and.
Do you remember celebrating with the fans that day?
Yes.
Seeing the excitement on their faces.
Yes.
And obviously the shirt that you lifted up and showed.
Yeah.
It was your sons who designed that for you, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yes. I told them, hey, come on, guys, let's do something special, you know, because I got the feeling that something going on the next two games because it's derby games, so.
Yeah.
Let's do a nice bench shirt, so yeah.
Brilliant. And your last goal for West Brom was actually against Wigan, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember, did you celebrate?
No, I didn't. I didn't celebrate. We were quite lucky to draw, to be honest, because I remember the team talks before the game, and everybody was scared after the team talks.
Scared?
Yeah, scared from Wigan Athletic.
Why was that then?
Because the manager said Wigan Athletic is little Barcelona in England, you know.
Really?
Yeah, and it was second last in the league. And everybody was...
And what did you think about that then?
I thought, oh my god, they are second last and we're fighting the third season in a row against relegation, so please.
So I suppose in the end you were quite happy with the point.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Okay. There was one time when you called out some of your teammates publicly, you felt that they weren't applying themselves enough. What was your thinking behind that, and how did your teammates react to you?
And we had a really good start in the Premier League, in the first Premier League season. You know, we were up in the first half of the table, or nearly in the top 4 or 5.
Yeah,
the first 8 games, I think.
Yeah.
Before we lost against Blackpool.
Yeah.
And Roberto Di Matteo was a very kind man, you know, and he was a long time a player, you know, and he knew everything about dressing room talks and everything like that, you know. And what I saw, because we were so successful in the beginning, everybody thought, hey, it's a self-runner, you know, so you don't need to do too much to keep the momentum, and we do it like easy to stay in the Premier League, and it showed, you know. When we lost against Blackpool, we lost I think 8 games in a row before we start winning again, and it cost Roberto Di Matteo's job too, you know. And that's why it's always difficult, you know. I always get asked, hey Paul, could we do it internal, you know, to say internal, yeah, what's happened. But nothing is changing, you know.
No.
When you just keep quiet, you know, or when you talking about internal, you know. Sometimes you have to say, hey, come on, boys, wake up, because we go in the wrong direction, and that's why that was the only reason to don't get in trouble for the season, for the rest of the season, and fighting against relegation, you know.
Yeah.
And we dropped dramatically, you know. When I remember after the new year, we were still, I think, was it 17? I think, man.
It took quite an end of season turnaround, didn't it, to save the club, really?
And normally, if you look back on the statistics, you know, it's very uncertain that newly promoted team is getting back straight, you know, because you have a good atmosphere, you have the momentum, and normally you keep up the first year of getting promoted, you know.
Yeah. Paul, can you remember how your teammates reacted to you then? Were they angry with you?
I definitely remember Jerome Thomas. He was very angry.
what happened? What did he do?
He told me I should shut up and just be quiet. And but then when you see the reaction from your colleagues, then you know you are true, you know.
No, but I mean, do you think it did the job then? Do you think they changed after that?
Not immediately, to be honest. Not immediately, because you know it was also the Christmas period where we had very very few games, you know, and many games, and it was very difficult because I spoke about the trainings, you know, the quality of the trainings and too many players resting, you know, and not training properly. I know it is a difficult time around Christmas because you have so many games, but in a training, you know, you prepare for a game, so you need to train properly to, yeah.
Did they invite you to the Christmas party?
Yeah, I was invited, but I had my own table.
Who was you close with, Paul? Was you close with Peter?
Peter and Jonas Olsen.
Oh, Jonas, yeah.
But Peter was one of my best.
Are you still
colleagues.
In touch with him?
Yes, yeah.
I play a bit of golf with him.
Yeah?
Yeah,
do you?
I play golf, yeah.
He's playing the charity game, huh?
Yeah, he's playing almost every day.
Yeah.
Too much, he's lucky. I don't have the
he's
time.
He's a grown-up.
I know, golf almost, pro, yeah. No, so you still keep in touch with some of your West Brom friends, And if an opportunity arose at West Brom, could you see yourself working back there in the future in some sort of role?
West Brom is a former club of mine, you know, and I'm always staying in touch with my clubs, with my former clubs, and it would be a pleasure for me to having a certain role in English football and mainly at West Bromwich Albion. Yeah.
You speak so passionately about the game, and you strike me as a player, former player, who when you was in the heart of your career, you just loved every minute of it.
Yes.
You know, you really looked forward to the games. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely. And loved everything what's combined with football, you know. It's not about the performing on the pitch, it's everything, you know, because I remember I was the only player who held supporters meetings, you know, in Southern Coldfield, and because it means a lot for the supporters, you know, not just seeing them from the stands, you know, to get in touch with the personality and with the human, you know, and I think that's gonna missing in football, you know, that the supporters getting the bad, you know, the connection. You stay miles away, you know, and you think, who's that? And he's playing for my beloved club.
So like West Brom in particular, then they've got so many positions that need to be filled this summer. Yeah. Do you think it's an ideal opportunity for them to rebuild and try and get closer to what you're trying to say?
I think relegation is always a good opportunity to rebuild something, you know, because you're losing a certain status and now you need to recover, and you can recover negatively or positively,
and
you can see, hey, one step back and then two steps forward, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what I always thought about my career, you know. I remember 2001 when I was 1.5 seasons professional footballer, the Austria Vienna, the first Bundesliga, they got rid of me. I'm not good enough, you know. They just dropped me in the second division team. And I thought, I'm 21 and my career is over now. What? No. From there on, I set my vision, I want to play in the Premier League in 4 years' time. So you need to know to use, or you need to learn to use a drop back negative scenario, you know, to rebuild your vision and your targets, and then coming back even stronger.
So just going back to that time when you were rejected almost, was that a real changing point in your career?
Yeah, absolutely, because I remember the first game I played for this team, you know.
Yeah.
We conceded two goals, what was my mistake, you know, and the next game I was on the bench, even on the bench, you know, I got dropped from the first division, also from the Bundesliga in the second division, played a game, you know, and got dropped. Wow. A drop because I made two mistakes when we conceded the goals, you know, and I was sitting on the bench and I thought, okay, that was it.
What happens next? But for somebody so young at 21, that could, if they're not mentally strong, yes, that could break them, couldn't it?
And that's my personal coach helped me a lot, you know,
yeah,
because now we started talking about, hey, what's my potential, what's my targets, what's my vision, you know.
Yeah.
And I started 2001 with him, you know. And we set a short, middle, and long-term range targets, you know. And my long-term target was,
Premier League.
Signing a contract at the Premier League, you know. And it was definitely, it was exactly 4 years after I set my targets, you know.
Wow. So that's what you're trying to do now, Paul, with younger kids as well.
But you can see it, you know, 4 years. You need certain time to build something, you know. You can't say, yeah, we got relegated and we play Premier League next, so we get promotion straight away and we do this and this and this. No, you have to rebuild and you have to give you time, a certain time, because otherwise you don't succeed, you know.
What should West Brom's aims be then now?
Rebuild?
Yeah.
From the top, you know. To speak about what's our philosophy, what's our vision, and then you can start build from up from the top down to the bottom, you know. So then you can think about the structure, the strategy, you know, and also the time scale, the timeline. When will we reach the targets, you know, and it, for certain in the next 4 or 5 years. You have to be back in the Premier League, and the next 4 to 5 years, so you need to think about 10 years period, you know?
Yeah.
Playing Champions League at least once.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah, you think. No, it's the vision, you know?
That's the vision.
Or should I say, now stay in the Premier League another 10 years? We had this.
That's done. Yeah. Now you have to think big, don't you?
Yes.
If you don't, then you're never going to succeed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. And for a certain way, do you know the budget of West Bromwich, the last?
The who, sorry?
How much money do you have for the season?
I don't know. I don't know the exact figures, but
they're at the limit. But 120, 130?
It would be 140, I think.
140, yeah,
around about that. But
do you know Red Bull Salzburg?
Yes.
Yeah, in the semi-finals.
Semi-final of the Europa League.
They have 60.
Wow.
Half of them.
So what's their secret? Have they gone with younger players? Or?
They have a philosophy, a concept.
Yeah.
And it never changes with the manager. It's staying always the same.
Every time the manager is replaced? Yes. Right.
Always
comes
the same.
In and has the same philosophy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So thank you to Greg Evans and Paul Sharna for that. That was really enlightening. We will, of course, be bringing you more Albion legends in the weeks and months to come. Tell your friends. Thank you to Kieran for joining me again this week.
Thanks, Graham. Nice to be here again.
And thank you to you for listening. We will see you next Thursday for another Woodman Corner.